What we've been looking at is in this whole concept of aging is taking a hopefully a positive approach to aging. So many people look at aging as a negative. Oh, it's just one of loss and decay and And I've been trying to give a more positive look at aging to recognize, well, as we said yesterday, aging happens. And so knees don't work as well, or shoulders don't work as well. But, as we said yesterday, successful aging happens with adaptation, to do things differently. There was a story of a woman that lived on a farm in southern Minnesota down by Plainview. She was still living alone at 111. She finally quit scrubbing her floors on her hands and knees at age 108 and started using a mop. But she was still baking homemade bread every week. But what she did was take the crock and place it on a stool or a chair that was lower than the table so she could lean into it. She couldn't knead up here anymore, so she had it down here so that she could knead. Mm-hmm. She made changes in how she did things, but she just kept right on doing it. Now, I don't think at 111 I'll be baking bread because I don't bake it now, but you never can tell. But the point is, successful aging comes by adapting, doing things differently. There are some losses. I mean, I hear my residents talk about, I'm seeing you knitting. I used to knit. And their arthritis or things in their hands get to the point they had to give it up. But sometimes they're able to teach other people how to do it. So there's ways of adapting. So much of it depends on our own mental attitude. So we're looking at positive, successful aging, which includes a lot of things. Let's talk about ism for a minute. What is ism? Let's bring everybody up to date.
Pessimism.
Pessimism is a form of it?
Optimism.
What is ism?
A thing.
It describes a way of life or a way of thinking. Okay. So alcoholism, workaholicism, capitalism, socialism, it's kind of a way of thinking. When we think of ism, we think of the words identity, security, and meaning. Where do I find my identity? If I find it in my work, workaholicism is probably where I live. Security, if it's in my pension plan, again, work becomes a driving force. Meaning, for many people who have worked, you know, for 40 years, when they come to retire, well, what is my life now? What am I going to do? It's that sense of meaning. So ism describes that sense of meaning, and it really gives us, am I working now? So then we went into this and talked about an application of this. We introduced the concept of the wellness wheel, the wholeness wheel, identifying that the core of life, in other words, these are the components of leading a whole life. By the way, dignity, I'm changing the name of this thing to Aging with Boldness, but dignity comes from the Latin dignitas, which means wholeness and completeness. And so aging with dignity is to age with wholeness and completeness. And so here we have the wholeness wheel, developed through the Inter-Lutheran Council on Wellness. But at the very center is baptism. For Lutheran Christians in particular, or Catholic or other sacramental groups, baptism is not only that entrance right to the church, it's also God's claim on the individual. I have called you by name, and you are mine. My identity, child of God. My security, God is my refuge and my strength. My meaning comes through in various passages of Scripture as God calls us into our vocation. And our vocation may or may not be our work. Vocation is my calling. As I've gone back and reflected on my life, for example, I've come to realize that my vocation is to provide a safe place for people to become who they are and to become that to the max. So wherever whether I've been teaching or as a chaplain or as a tour guide or any of the things that I do, what comes through in all of that is to empower people to be who they are. And so that's my vocation. You see the distinction? No matter what job I have. And so that is for Christians our sense of ism. We find that's our ism, and that kind of gives us then the core, and everything else radiates out from that. If you've ever done weight training, you know that they emphasize core. So as we look at this, then the other aspects, the social, interpersonal, emotional, physical, financial, vocational, intellectual, all flow out of that core. And so as a person lives out these components in wholeness, it leads the whole life to be one of wholeness. Thoughts? Question. All right, so with that in mind, we want to focus on a couple of different things today. One of them is going to be in terms of the life journey and how people are impacted by that. So think in terms of your life and major events. Now, the other day you did that lifeline with the peak and valley. Peaks and valleys change who we are, if we reflect on them. For example, in my own life, I think I mentioned my first wife died at age 32. I had a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old, and it was in a brand new congregation. Let's just see how much stress you can put in a person's life. And when she died, I mean, I was well aware that she was dying. And I was there when she died, and I knew that that marriage had ended, da, 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 da. But what I didn't come to deal with was, who am I after her death? Who am I without her being in my life? And when I do grief workshops, I use children's building blocks, and I make a triangle. And I'll point out and I give a name to each building block, like grandma, grandpa, cousin, whatever. And I pull out one block. What happens?
Everything falls.
Everything falls. In physics, they say when the paradigm goes to zero, everything changes. And so it then becomes a process of rebuilding. Well, I know now that I did not take time to figure out who I was. I didn't take time to do a healthy rebuilding. So how that impacted me is different than if I would have taken the time for a healthy rebuilding. These things shape our lives. And so if you think in terms of your own life, and they don't have to be major crises like death. I mean, retirement. I mean, what is life after retirement? And do we think about that ahead of time? Hopefully we do. Because the people that don't plan for retirement have a terrible time retiring. Because they have nothing to look forward to all they can do is look back. It's how we understand the life events that shapes us. Thoughts. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to blink for a minute. Yes.
After my husband passed, I took the journey through poetry and wrote well over 100 poems or more of grieving poems until I found that they knew that the whole business of it had changed to love poems. And
they changed to
love poems.
Love poems?
You know, the folders that we keep them in. I had it in a grieving folder, but it wasn't several years after that it changed it to grieving and love poems. I mean,
yeah.
It just helped. The journey through poetry helped a lot and still does. I still write.
Okay.
Plus, I write letters to him.
Oh, yeah.
Telling him about my day.
That's really cool. Another friend of mine does hers by writing prayers. Mm-hmm. And they just published, her church just compiled them and put them in a prayer book to give to members of the congregation.
Nice.
Yeah, so, all right, that's different ways of sitting back. I mean, I finally did it through counseling, which helped me look back and reflect. But from, you know, and then as I think I mentioned, I remarried a little bit too soon. We had a very rough marriage and eventually divorced, okay? Well, I could look at that whole thing and say, tragic, tragic, tragic. But I had to be honest with myself. What did I contribute to that divorce, and who am I, and how do I become a different person? And so the good that can come out of that is to reflect on who I am and attempt to really address those kinds of things. You get the idea? Because sometimes life events happen and people don't pay any attention and just become bitter or stay the same. And I think the real gift of successful aging is to address the demon. Address the demon. There's a story of St. Francis, and Francis, as you know, was filled with love and joy, and, you know, we know all those stories, but he was super grossed out by people with leprosy, wanted nothing to do with them, couldn't stand to be around them, could not stand to see them, no. And one day it's recorded he was walking down the street, and the practice of the culture is that a person with leprosy, if they were out on the street, as they walked along, had to cry out, "Leper! Leper!" You know, to warn people. And so he's walking down the street, and a leper is coming towards him and crying out, "Leper! Leper!" And God said to Francis, "Kiss the leper." Francis said, "No." God said, "Kiss the leper." The third time, Francis, "Okay," and kisses the leper. And what we learn from that is to kiss our demons. The more we run from them, the more they control us. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. The more we run from our demons, the more they control us. And so to turn around and face the demon, again with the power of the Holy Spirit, because on ourselves we're not able to do that. Well, there are some things we can look at here. Rembrandt painted both of these. They're both called Saint Bartholomew. And they were painted at two different times in his life. Saint Bartholomew, and the practice is when you're painting a saint, you include in the picture how they died. Saint Bartholomew was skinned alive. That was his martyrdom, okay? Thus the knife. Now you can see there's a knife here, and you can barely see it, but can you see the knife here? Okay. What do you notice different about the two paintings?
One is older.
Which one?
The right.
The right side. He is older.
He looks older.
Yeah, he looks older.
And this one is holding the knife like he's going to use it. The other one he's just kind of...
Yeah, and it's kind of a pensive use of the knife on the right side. It's not a grip that you, well, yeah, it's just there.
To me, on the right, he looks bothered. He's thinking deeper, deep thoughts there.
Yeah.
He only has a mustache, too.
Okay. And the youthful Bartholomew. What's difference in the two faces?
Wrinkles.
Wrinkles. But the older Bartholomew is looking downward, right? Mm-hmm. Pensive, pondering.
He looks like he's looking at someone.
He's also clean-shaven.
Clean-shaven, but... On the left side, we have a Bartholomew that is looking up. He seems more hopeful. He seems more muscular, right? Mm-hmm. The same person painted from two different perspectives. Now, it's interesting. I went to this Rembrandt display at the Minneapolis Institute of Art. And these two were... this one was like here... and then over here, and I just sat there for over an hour just looking at these two paintings. And when I read about Rembrandt's life, this on the left was painted when he was kind of at the peak of his career. But right after this painting, his wife died. And then he began to spend way too much money. And then he had an affair with housekeeper, who managed his house and took care of things. And he's living in Amsterdam, which at that time was controlled by the very conservative Dutch Reformed Church. And so when his affair became public, he was banished, which means nobody could buy his paintings, nobody could associate with him, he was cut off from the community. In that time period, he lost his house, his kids took over his finances, and he really went on a downward spiral. How do we see that in the paintings?
Well, he looks worried in that right hand to me.
Well, yeah. His eyes do. It's more.
He looks very pensive.
Yeah.
He might even be
sick. Sad.
Sad, yeah, in the second one.
Yeah, sad, mm-hmm. Broken, mm-hmm. Optimism is gone, right?
Mm-hmm. He's lost.
Now, the what?
He's lost.
Yeah.
Steve, how does he know he's going to be skinned alive? Was that his choice as a way to begin?
I didn't go back and study. That's just what happened to him. I mean, some of them were boiled alive. They had different forms of martyrdom. James was cut in half. If you go back and look at the history of the apostles and how they died, it was not pretty.
No, certainly was not.
So that, but they pull that out in later paintings to connect, so that we can say, "Oh, that's Bartholomew," because of the knife.
Okay.
So you see what happens, how life impacts how we view things. If you go to Monet, who's another famous painter that I like a lot, you know that most of his paintings were the lily pads, you know, and it's greens and blues and gentle. right? When his son dies in World War II, his paintings turn into orange and black and red, and they're very abstract. They don't have any real form to them. And then he begins losing his eyesight, and he changes his style again. But you have all these changes impacting how he expresses what he sees and what he feels. Now, if we think in terms of our own lives, and as we're painting different things, as we age, you know, one of the things I told myself, literally I told myself at 20, I do not want to become a skeptic and a pessimist. I want to stay an optimist. And I think I told you that Don Quixote is my hero. Chasing windmills, that idealism, and to dream the impossible dream. I find as I'm getting older, I have to work harder at that. I've had enough life events with deaths and divorce and this and that. You know, times I can get rather pessimistic about life. Thankfully, I don't stay there. But life has a way of shaping us. What are your thoughts? What kind of rings for you?
Well, I think the great sadnesses, the great tragedies that happen in our life really do make your view of everything different. And I had a thought, when a parent died, that's part of your life that's gone. But when a spouse dies, it dumps the whole thing upside down. So.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I think, potentially even worse, and thank God I have not experienced it, is the loss of a child. I am not sure how I would, I mean, I know I would have to cope with it, but I think that can be highly impactful. The loss of a job. The loss of a good friend. Those all impact who we are. But also positive things shape us. I mean, even this thing for me here at Holden, I got talked, my group that I came out with last year said, fill out an application and see what happens. And they kept bugging me all week. And I kept saying, nah, they're not going to want me, you know. And finally I did it, you know. Well, I sit and reflect, and okay, why has God brought me here? Is it for me to give, or is it for me to receive? When I spent the 2 summers in Wittenberg, Germany, as chaplain to English-speaking people, I openly used that as a time of recovery from the divorce. And even went back and read all of my journals to reflect on life and what had happened. So good things, bad things, but we want to celebrate the good. Anytime you have a child, life is different, right? You're never the same again. So, you know, another, getting the promotion that you want, or getting up the hill in 1 hour and 40 minutes instead of 2 hours, you know, right, Steve?
That's trivial compared with these other things.
See, I'm going to challenge you, Steve. I don't think anything's trivial.
Okay. No, really, I thank God I can do that. Really,
yeah.
Really.
It just makes me mad you're a year older than I am. And you can do that. You know. But nothing's trivial. Every little thing that affects us changes us. The fact that we're sitting here together this morning, none of us will ever be the same again, because we have impacted each other's lives. And if we can begin to see that opportunity, and there's a wonderful Lutheran question that permeates this whole thing. Anybody want to guess what it is?
What does that mean?
What does this mean? What does this mean? What does it mean that Louise and I went walking yesterday, you know? I mean, it was a good walk, but the conversation, What does this mean? How is God speaking to me through this experience? Troop just sat down and started talking to me the other day. And it was just fascinating to hear his history. And if you want a true delight, ask about his house being Disney North. We're not going to do it now. But I won't be the same again because of these conversations. Okay? And if we begin to look at life that way and the opportunities, yeah, our paintings will change. Our paintings will change. But it's just anything that happens. I mean, you can spend your whole day. What does this mean? Comments.
Well, at this point, I just like getting up.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I'm grateful for the day. You know,
yeah.
It beats the heck out of the other option.
One of the sisters at St. Paul Monastery cracks me up. She's one of these that can come up with these great one-liners. And as we were working on this topic, she raised her hand and said, I just kind of wake up in the morning wondering what's not going to work today. And, you know, that does become a good part of who we are. Follow along. What did you hear? What did you read?
He loved someone.
Love what?
He loved his wife or this person.
It's an expression of love.
And the loss of love.
Loss of love?
How love fled.
It expresses both the hope and the fear of aging. And the line, and slowly read a dream of the soft look your eyes had once, and of their shadows deep. What do you think he's saying with that?
Well, he's looking back at what was and the differences now.
Yeah. And I also get a sense of pensiveness. I think this is going to be a stereotype, but when I was younger, I was a lot more impetuous than what I am now. I would just march into things without even thinking about it. And now I have that sense of being pensive, of I dream the soft look, but now I just kind of reflect and wonder a lot about what does this mean, which for me is a change. I think that comes because of life experience and aging. Steve, you love this poem. I've heard you say that a couple of times.
Well, I've actually haven't seen this one before, but there are several Yeats poems that I think are just classic.
Yeah, what do you think of this one?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah. It's interesting how this came about. I was in Ireland, and our tour guide, we stopped at the church and at the burial place of Yeats. And he played this, he read this poem as we were pulling into the parking lot. And I said to him as we got off the bus, I must have that. And tracked it down, and then discovered I already had the music and didn't even know it.
Who was the singer? Was that, it sounds like Joan Baez.
Kathy Weir.
Oh, okay.
W-E-H-R. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, I have an album of hers on my computer. Oh. And when I went to search for this, that popped up. There was another song on there that I bought the album for to use. And I'm going, oh my gosh,
beautiful.
This must be Destiny.
Yes, beautiful.
Yeah. But it does. There's a beautiful gentleness about growing older. And I don't know about you, but reading in the evenings is kind of just give me a fireplace and a book, and I can fall asleep faster than just about anybody. Because there's just a certain...
Hidden life of trees does it for me.
Yeah. The what?
The hidden life of trees. When she starts reading that to me, I just... nod off.
Okay.
Instantly.
Okay. Right. Well, anyway, I thought you might appreciate this.
Yeah.
There is a beauty and a grace about growing older. However, if you go into Richard Rohr, which you heard Melinda talk about, he has a book called Falling Upward, which I didn't have time to do much with, although it's really affected my philosophy. As we get older, we have a choice of being a bitter warrior or engaging our and embracing our aging and in effect becoming mentors to others. And I used some of his adult development stuff when I was teaching adult ed. And I, from that, came to the conviction in my early 50s, it was time to shift from being, you know, the one charging ahead, and to begin identifying, in particular for me, it was young men who I could begin to mentor into leadership. And so I was beginning to step out of leadership positions by taking a young person on board with me and following the principle of I do it and you watch, and then we do it together, and then you do it and I watch, and then I take off and you do it. And I think that becomes part of healthy aging also. Finding someone to mentor, taking someone under your wing, and I think I kind of hear that in this poem too. Just a certain sense of calm that comes and saying it's time now to turn things over. Now, do I still have temptations to jump into leadership? Yes. Am I trying hard not to? Yes. But it's that commitment that I made. It's time to raise up the next generation of leaders. Can't keep doing it all myself. And that's also a part of healthy aging. Comments? Yes?
That's a little bit. Thank you. I think we age at night while we are asleep.
Interesting.
Because when we wake up in the morning and look at ourselves in the mirror, it's like, hello.
Yeah.
Who are you?
Yeah.
It's nice you're here, but who are you?
Yes. Well, you know, and
that, I will love you today.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I will love you today.
But it is interesting sometimes to work with Alzheimer's patients in that they don't recognize themselves in the mirror. They don't know themselves as they look now. They know themselves as they remember themselves. So there's some truth in that. Waking up and looking in the mirror and going, whoop.
Was that there yesterday?
Yeah, how did that thin...
Whatever that might be.
Where did that thin person go? Yeah, good point. Although I think it is that new awareness that we wake up with each day. Yeah. Other thoughts? Okay, then... I don't know what to do about this.
That's okay.
Perspectives on aging. Now, this comes out of some research, but I think it again shows the attitudes in the culture. Ageism is rampant in our culture. And it's in both directions. You're too old to do something, or you're too young to do something. We don't see the individual and their gifts. Ageism takes over, and it filters how we view things. I mean, again, going back, when Steve said 71, I went, crap. You know? But I mean, you don't picture a 71-year-old riding up and down that dumb hill, okay? That's for 20-year-olds. That's ageism. I'm just as guilty of it as anybody. So the perspectives, and this is with an attitude of loss. See what you think about these. Older people are not interested in the outside world. Well, but that's cultural. Older people don't want... Oh, this one just blows me out of the water. Older people don't want or need close relationships. Older people contribute little to society. Well, again, these are views. These are views. As you get older, you get more set in your ways.
You know, I think that's true.
Well, I prefer to call it I'm becoming self-defined.
Okay.
But I am set in my ways. And it doesn't mean I can't change. Yes?
Well, so we might like to be set in our ways, but the world that we live in doesn't allow it.
Yeah?
You know, it's like the world that we live in is ahead of us, which it is, and we're constantly moving into something new, which we are. And it's just, I don't know, it's a mystery.
But, you know, there's still a number, it's amazing. Of course, I think these are people older than any of us in here, and like in my homeowner association, they refuse to learn how to use a computer.
Yeah.
I can't send, I think while I'm gone, I'm being elected president of the homeowner association, which I'm not thrilled with, but I can't send notices out by email. Because at least a third of our community has no email. Mm. So, you know, they get set in their ways. I, on the other hand, am dealing with a new computerized thermostat that I can adjust even from here, which is saving me a lot of money, but is causing me a great deal of consternation as well. Mental and physical deterioration are inevitable in old age. That's a perception.
I can't do a cartwheel anymore.
Well, I can't either, but then on the other hand, I never could.
Oh, yeah. I don't try. It's dangerous.
Yeah, deterioration is an interesting word. I mean, yeah, our bodies change. My arthritis is getting more pronounced. But I don't know that it's necessarily inevitable. I'm going to make this statement, and I think I would hold to it. A third to a half of the people I work with would not be there had they made different choices. And I am constantly aware of the choices that I make. This morning, for example, I took food from the hiker's food table.
That ham looked good.
Well, as a diabetic and a lactose intolerant person, all that was left for me to eat this morning was berries, which sends my blood sugar sailing. So I just make decisions based upon what I need to do. And this morning, by the way, because I did that yesterday, I had perfectly normal blood sugars, and they've been all over the map the last few days. So, I mean, you have to make choices. You have to make choices. Older people are comfortable financially. Yeah, not all. Older people aren't interested in sex or intimacy.
I don't believe that.
Is that by gender?
Yeah, will you say that again?
Older people are not interested in sex or intimacy.
And what did you say?
I don't believe that.
Yeah.
Well, and again, we don't have to go to intercourse. Sometimes it's just touch.
Right.
Especially in nursing homes, people hunger for touch. Mm-hmm. And so we do hand massages. I do healing touch in some situations, and I got trained as a Reiki practitioner so that, you know, you can do some of that healing touch kind of thing. It's very, very important at all ages, but I think especially older, where that doesn't happen as much, and the culture has gotten so uptight about touch, you know, you're almost afraid to touch anybody for fear of getting sued. Older people cannot make good decisions about important issues.
Oh, they'd like that to be true, wouldn't they?
Yeah.
So they can take over your life.
Although there's at times that you need to let them take over, but I think by and large, most older people are very capable of making good decisions. Older people want to die. I don't buy that.
Where did these things come from?
This comes from a study that talked about stereotypes about aging. These are stereotypes.
Who did it? Do you have that info?
It's a website on health.howstuffworks.com. Wellness aging process.
Okay.
And I would not go to the wall saying that this is, you know, truth, but I do think these are stereotypes. And then, this one's kind of dumb, I think. Science has answered all of our questions about aging. I think they're answering a lot of questions about aging, but they have not answered all of them. Now, on the positive side, and these are true, you are wiser.
I don't believe that.
You are wiser than what you used to be.
Yes.
And compared to many people, you have greater wisdom. Not anybody wants it, but, you know, we've got it.
I tell that younger generation who turns 50 that now at 50 they have wisdom because of life experiences. As you transition between 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, really at 50, just based upon life experiences, you've now joined the group of wisdom. And it only improves between the 50s and 60s and as we go through our 70s. And so I believe wisdom.
Although it's interesting, I listened to a radio program on NPR, and grandfather, and son owning a mechanic shop for automobiles. Hmm. And it starts off with the grandfather and the son talking about how difficult it was to work with. The son was complaining, his dad was using old techniques, not wanting to get into the modern world, blah, 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 blah. Dad would say, you got to do it this way because that's what's me, Then it goes to this son, who's now the father, and his son, and the same argument is going on. The son is saying his dad is outdated, and I think that does go generationally. And I'll be honest, I mean, my granddaughter teaches me more about my iPhone than anybody else, because she knows it better than I do.
Well, but you've seen the cartoon, haven't you, where the grandparents come out on the porch with their computers and phones and everything to hand to their grandchildren when they come to visit at Thanksgiving or something?
Yeah.
Here, these don't work.
Yeah. Exactly.
And they're only 10 and 11.
Yeah.
That's very true about technology, but when you think of life experiences and life's relationships, I really think that our wisdom that comes in. We kind of look at it in retrospect, the decisions that we made, and things even such simple as career direction. Talking about careers and stuff.
Yeah.
You don't have to decide at 18 that you're going to be an astronaut. Have life's relationships and getting along. And like your first day at McDonald's, learning how to be polite to people and showing up on time and stuff. So, regardless of your academic status, we don't all have to be doctors to be wise.
I know. Yeah, I can tell you for a fact.
But, I just think it's a great wisdom and a great education through life experiences. But really, at the time you hit 50, you tested most things, not all things, because life, no matter how long we live, we're learning until the day we die.
Well, here's another one. You are more confident. Oh. Now, to me, it depends on the topic. Mm-hmm. There's some areas where I'm not very confident. Mm-hmm. But I love the Geico commercials these days, about confidence. You are your own person. And I think that does become very true for most of us. You are a conduit to the past. Mm-hmm. And I think we don't want to lose that one. We are institutional memory. And that's an important gift. You are an elder. And I think there's an honor that comes with that title. You are an elder. Comment?
Mm-hmm. I am the matriarch of my family now. So people come to me with questions, family questions.
Yeah.
But past generations were not talkers, were not givers of themselves. They kept secrets or whatever. They never talked about them.
Yeah.
So I feel very sad now that I can't answer my family's questions because they expect me to, because I am bigger.
Well, and hopefully, and I think we're learning this, it's important to get that stuff written down in memoirs or other kinds of things. We were talking yesterday about scrapbooks with pictures and narration, those kinds of things. You are motivated. Yeah. I'm sort of motivated. I can get real lazy. I like watching Steve ride his bike up and down, but I'm not too motivated to do it. Now, this one I think is true. You are more spiritual. And part of what the research shows, we now have time to engage in spiritual practice when we didn't when all the kids were at home. I mean, the only safe place to meditate when kids are at home is in the bathroom before they discover you're there and start pounding on the door. And you are connected for the most part until, unless we get into our 90s when a lot of our friends have died, we are connected. We have a network that we can call on. So there's a lot of positives about aging, that we can do things now. I mean, I can be here now. I couldn't have done that when all five kids were home, you know? And so we have lots of opportunities that we didn't have at other times. All right. All right, I'm moving into an area that for many Americans is going to be a difficult conversation, and I'm going to say that ahead of time. And if it gets to be too much for anybody, I'm not going to be offended. Just come back and tell me you're okay if you leave, okay? But we're gonna take a Benedictine principle. Rule of Benedict, chapter 4, verse 47. Keep death daily before your eyes. And Benedict says that the monk is called, and when he says monk, he really invites all of us to keep death daily before our eyes. Why would you want to do that? I mean, many would say it's morbid. Why would you want to do that?
Maybe to make the best possible use of that day.
Spot on. That's Benedict's point. It teaches us to maximize each day and to see the gift of life and to celebrate the next step of life, which is death. Need some more? Fair enough?
Yeah, I think we'll be here. Oh, we have enough.
Okay, good. But this is something in the monastic way, and as an oblate, we're even challenged to keep this before us. And again, I think not to get too autobiographical, but, you know, when I was having my bypass surgery, and you're getting ready for that, and the surgeon says, well, there's only a 1% chance that anything's going to go wrong. Mm-hmm. Well, I tend to be the person that goes, okay, I'm the 1%. I can remember that day vividly, and as I'm being wheeled on the gurney into the operating room, God was so good. There was a choir piece that our choir Concordia sang a lot. Surely it is God who saves me. I will trust in him and not be afraid. And then it goes on. And that just kept going through my head as I went on that gurney. I call it the gospel according to gurney. But it caused me, and my life changed because of that surgery. I felt like I was given a second chance. My dad died at 49 of heart disease, my uncle at 51, and my brother died at age 45. And so one of the questions that came to me as a result of this, all right, God, what's in store? This is a graceful gift. And so by keeping death ever before me, I began to see it differently. And when I was told that I had cancer on my tongue and they had to do surgery and ended up doing it twice, the only thing that I could think of through that whole time was, oh, for a thousand tongues to sing thy great Redeemer's praise. Because that is so important to me. It gives you a perspective. To deny it keeps us from fully embracing life. Let's read this part from the book, The Grace in Aging. We'll just do a paragraph. So read a paragraph and stop, and somebody else pick it up.
You want us from the start here?
We cannot speak.
Yeah.
We cannot speak about aging and awakening without speaking about death and dying. It certainly seems to come up at every turn. We need to confront our mortality.
Meditating on death opens us up deeply to the precious gift of this life and the boundless gift we can make of it. It begs us to look at what remains frivolous in our lives, what remains careless. Most of us have lived so many decades on the surface of being, whistling around the outskirts of awareness.
Question.
Meditating on death instantly calls us to question on the deepest of levels. What am I doing? What do I want? What does all this mean? What is it all about? What is spirit? What is self? Who are the I that is asking the question? Our desire to explore, to inquire, to see, intensifies in urgency.
We have no idea how much time each of us has left to clearly see, which is to say, awaken.
Reactions. Any part that you're drawn to? Yes.
The last one, we have no idea how much time we have left. I think it happens to some people where they do and given a time limit. And it makes you realize what's really important. That's how I came up here and everything. I have a limited time, and I might make it another 6 months, and I might not, so I just have to wait and see what happens.
But you know what I love, knowing that, because you had shared it with me, was watching you on that cart go at rabbit speed down the road. She was grinning from ear to ear with hair flying in all directions, having the time of her life, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. You're borderline dangerous on that thing. Yeah, but you do get a different awareness, don't you? Does
yeah,
the air smell...
Go out there and live. Yeah.
Yeah, the air smells differently.
Yes.
Yeah. Other thoughts?
I don't know. I had a thought of I'm closer to the end. I'm 83.
Mm-hmm.
So I realize that 6 years I may not be here. Of course, tomorrow I may not be here either.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can really reflect back and think about my life. We were drawing these lines that go up a way down. It seemed like my life had been more of a straight thing. I don't know why that is. Why has that happened?
Who knows?
Yeah, that's what makes sense.
Yeah.
Right.
Could be that maybe you accept what it is.
That could be. That's a good answer. Good.
Yeah.
Right. Good.
You go with the flow.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a mission. I have a mission in life.
Okay.
I have a twin great-grandson and a great-granddaughter. And my mission is to be at their graduation. And they are currently in the fifth grade.
Okay.
So, that's where I'm going to be. And since that's where I'm going to be, I live toward that.
Sure, sure.
In every way that I think and do and act and I don't doubt it for one thing.
It's a strong goal for you.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the third paragraph. Meditating on death allows us to ask the creative question. What is it all about? What does it mean? What is self? It gives us a chance to look at the day and just, as the movie said, carpe diem.
Yes.
Seize the day. It is a gift from God. But sometimes it's hard to see that.
Yes.
mortality, that when we face mortality, it's also easy to shut down. And that's where community, I think, is helpful. If we sit in isolation, it's easy to look at, let's say, death and become very morbid. And just sit in our chair and wait for it to happen, rather than getting on a buggy and do rabbit speed down the road. That's an image that's going to stay with me for a long time. Let's look at the Meditation on Death by Wendell Berry. Anyone feel up to reading that for us?
The longer we are together, the larger death grows around us. How many we know by now who are dead? We who are young now count the cost of having been. Our hair turns white with our ripening, as though to fly away in some coming wind, bearing the seed of what we know. It was bitter to learn that we come to death as we come to love, bitter to face the just and solving welcome that death prepares. But that is bitter only to the ignorant who pray it will not happen. Having come the bitter way to better prayer, we have the sweetness of ripening.
Thoughts? What are you drawn to?
Better things are yet to come.
Better things are yet to come.
And I think of some of our 90-year-olds and beyond. A lot of their friends are gone, and it's just such a, you know, they say, I'm the last one in my family to be alive, and it's got to be a strange feeling when you get to that stage.
Yeah, I mean, my 50th high school reunion was a couple of years ago, and they've started an obituary page in our Facebook site. Because so many, I mean, there were 600 in my graduating class, so I mean, we're bound to have that. But every time I see a new name go on there, it hits me. And turning 70, for some reason, is hitting me, not in a bad way, but it's making me more aware, and that's okay. Before we go into this last poem that I want us to deal with, I do want to just, as a chaplain, just to check in with you. Do you have your advance directive in place? Mm-hmm. Many people avoid this because they don't want to deal with it. So you've got it in place. Yeah. Now here are some things you may or may not think about. If you should be lingering, and kind of in and out of a coma, do you or do you not want music? And if you want music, what type? The chaplain would appreciate it if you would tell somebody. Because I don't want to be playing Bach chorales to somebody that wants to listen to Twyla Paris. Okay? I have threatened my children within an inch of their lives. If you play country western music while I am dying, I will haunt you into eternity. You will regret it. Okay. Yes.
But you may have a right and an appreciation of that in that stage.
Yeah, you might.
I had a history teacher in eighth grade that played country western while we were studying in class, and we had no choice in the matter.
Oh. Well, and do you want a room full of people, or do you want quiet and solitude? You may not know the answer to that question.
Depends who the people are.
Well, that's true, but I mean, keep in mind, who do you want there and who do you not want there? I think these are things we don't think about very often, but I'll tell you, what I'm learning as chaplain, you know, is to be respectful of people's choices. In training, somebody said to me, we're not talking about your end of life, we're talking about theirs. Don't impose on people what's important to you. And that was a hard lesson, because I am the fount of all wisdom and should be able to select for people what is good for them, right? That was
everybody
sarcasm.
Knows it's Bach, Bach, anything by Bach. That's the best.
Yeah.
You just play it whether they want it or not.
Well, that's something. But keep those things in mind. That's part of facing death. I mean, people that die without wills today because they don't want to face death. These kinds of questions, I've learned as a chaplain, become very powerful. Because what I want is for that person to have the best homecoming ever. And that part of the good homecoming is the good leaving. And to make the leaving experience what's powerful for them.
Yeah, I like what you said, the homecoming. That really awakens me. Because I think it is too, but I never used that word. But it is a homecoming.
Well, and here's my death denial approach. Christians don't die, they just change addresses. So, all right, I want to play one more poem. It's on the back of your page. I kind of like this. As I told you, I'm into cheese. And
as a chaplain, do you believe in writing your own obituary?
Actually, I am going to be writing my own. I think there's some wisdom in writing your own obituary. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've realized, my kids know a lot about me, but there's a whole lot they don't know about me.
Yes.
So the Christmas present this year is going to be pictures and narrative about the first 10 years of my life. And then I'm going to keep that going. I think those kind of things are important.
Thank you.
Thoughts?
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. What did you like about it?
Everything.
Any specifics? Fear not.
Power of love.
Power of love? What do you think about that line, a soul afraid of dying never learns to live?
Mm-hmm. That's true.
That's true.
What does that mean?
I think we're afraid more of the pain. I don't want to be skinned alive. That would be absolutely,
yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. We don't know exactly how we are going to die.
Research says people generally are not afraid of dying. They're afraid of how they're going to die.
Mm-hmm. I know Henry Nouwen says that you should let your loved one know that it's okay for you to die. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been very clear with my family. If there's no medical hope, just let it happen. Mm-hmm. Just let it happen.
That's really an important thing to take the choice away. I mean, not make our families make those choices at the end.
Yeah.
But talk about it and give your what you want and let them know. My husband was going through that and we had talked about it and it was so much better to be able to, you know, say, okay, we won't do this additional chemo. Because we had talked about it. Only problem was he looked at me and sort of rolled his eyes and said, oh, well, I guess I'll never get the garage clean.
Well, and you know, it's true, and I think to think through this, I mean, things do change. I mean, I don't want to write it down that it's got to happen legally this way, so I've given my daughter the power of attorney to make those decisions, but it's very clearly written in my directive, if there's hope, then do whatever it takes, but if there's no hope, because there comes a point, for example, that feeding tubes are more painful than they are helpful.
Yeah.
And things like that. And to think through that stuff. But I guess I would like to leave us, let's take it back to the wholeness wheel. This song is about the core. Our identity, our security, and our meaning. When I find my identity in God and in my baptism and the promises made there, I can relax. My security is in God. Surely it is God who saves me. I will trust Him and not be afraid. My meaning, my life has had meaning as I've walked as a child of God. So I think it really boils right back down to that core. We become empowered to live. But the community is important. If you think of the Lazarus account, when Jesus calls him out of the grave. Now, personally, I would love to chat with Lazarus what it's like to have been in heaven and get called back to earth, okay? How angry was he about that? But here's the reality. He does not come leaping out of the cave. He is wrapped in grave clothes, which means he's bound up like a mummy. The best he can do is this, okay? And then Jesus says to the community, unbind him. It is part of Christian community to help us live in the freedom of the gospel. We live sometimes like we're defeated people. Like the resurrection never happened. And the invitation of Jesus is to become unbound. Now, unfortunately, the church does a much better job of tightening up the bandages by adding more rules. But Jesus said to the community, unbind him. So as we look at things and at life and at aging and wellness, we help each other. We help each other see the possibilities. We live as resurrected people who happen to be aging. Well, I think, according to my little clock, it is precisely 12 o'clock. And I could go on, as you can tell, forever, but I won't because it's lunchtime. But here's the image. Here's the image. Get on that electric cart and go at rabbit speed. That's life. That is life. And live it to the max, okay? Thank you all. It's been a good week.
Thank you very much.
And blessings in the journey as you're returning to wherever you're going. Even to the cheesehead.
Yes, sir.